Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing a number of equities and the key global themes out there in markets at the moment. And to do that, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, John. Good to be back. Hope you had a good Easter.
Yes, likewise. There has been a very brief break in the podcast after the last week, as I know you were away in the New Forest. I hope you enjoyed your break down there.
It was great. Weather was good. And yeah, it was, as I say, a change is as good as a rest. So, yeah.
Indeed. So we're back this week, Alan, on the podcast, and a particularly interesting podcast we have in store today, because we're going to touch very briefly on the markets and what's happening out there in the broader indices. But there's been a number of corporate updates as well as a couple of IPOs on the horizon, which we're going to discuss. So we'll start off by looking, if we may, Alan, at the FTSE 100. We're trading up today. We were up yesterday, and that was based on a very sharp decline that we saw in Monday's session after the announcements or further developments in China. They're sort of looking at lockdowns there and the potential economic fallout. The markets seem to have priced this in very quickly as a flash in the pan concern. I mean, in your views, Alan, is there any meat to these Chinese concerns, or is it just a case that they ride it out and it's a bit of a non-story?
I think it's, the lockdowns, I'm sure the COVID story is far from finished, John. I think we're going to see more lockdowns, possibly again in this country too, as the year sort of pushes on. This is an evil disease, and it's wreaking havoc everywhere. But it's now the norm. We're used to living with it and used to sort of having to deal with it. But I think if the vaccine program continues at the pace it has been going, then we can keep on top of it and we can learn to live with it. And I think that's the best we can say. But one thing that I did note today was that a Chinese drone company has refused to do business with Russia anymore. The first major Chinese company to do so. And I think that's highly significant in the isolation of Russia, because of course I think Xi and Putin at the end of the Winter Olympics signed a pact or said they would be working together and there'd be no limits to it, but I'm sure Xi didn't expect to see Putin wreaking the havoc on the global stage that he's doing today. So of course from that one hopes that certainly the Ukraine war looks like it's going to be a long drawn out process, and it's going to continue probably for at least another year. Let's hope that it can be contained. And of course, what we're seeing in these market spikes are the limitations resulting from sanctions imposed on Russia by the global community, and that of course is the huge increase in energy effectively being weaponized, with Russia switching off supplies to Poland and to Bulgaria. No doubt other countries will follow suit. And of course, Germany's moved to supply heavy tanks to the Ukraine. The first time it's actively supplied heavy armament to any country since the Second World War. So a lot of highly significant events which are causing markets to move around, but underneath it all, there's still the very strong fundamentals supporting certainly commodities. With Russia now being taken out of the world market, of course, there's a squeeze on commodity prices, which is pushing up the larger mining companies and some of the small explorers as well. And of course, there are the issues with energy prices too, oil prices, and all of the ramifications that comes with that. So one sector's down, another sector's up. It's quite normal to see that during times such as these.
Interesting you mentioned there the suspension of gas being supplied to Poland from Russia and also Bulgaria. This is something that the Europeans have left alone their sanctions so far in regards to the supply of oil and gas from Russia, mainly because anything that we do to hurt that is going to probably cause us more problems than maybe Russia, especially in the short term, given the increase in the cost of living. I mean, does that have the potential, Alan, you feel, if it expands to other countries, maybe even ourselves here in the UK, given what's happening with the fuel crisis at the moment, does that have maybe the potential to really tip us over in our economic growth here in the UK?
Yes, it does. But I think the world is repositioning. Certainly the West is repositioning to move away from Russia permanently in regard to its energy supplies. And of course, you know, if hopefully Putin is overthrown or the war is brought to an end, hopefully at that point, then we can resume relations with Russia. Because, you know, I think I'm certain that, you know, most Russians don't want this war and they don't want to be isolated from the West. Certainly the young generation don't. But regardless, yes, it will have an effect. It will have a destabilizing effect. Of course, Biden has agreed to get energy supplies, gas supplies, liquid gas supplies here to the UK, and it really prioritizes the development of clean energy supplies, which will of course take up some of that slack. But there is an interim period, of course, where there will be crisis, and there may be fuel shortages, which of course we'll get through. But you know, we will get through it. We will. You know, that's the most important thing.
Yes. I mean, there's lots of factors at play in markets at the moment, and I don't think it really reflects when we're looking at the FTSE 100 this morning, above 7,400, what's actually happening there. We won't go into it now, but it's something we discussed in much detail on the podcast, but we're looking at, you know, some of the forecasts for interest rate hikes over in the United States. That really does have the potential to rock markets going forward. As I said, not going to go into too much now, probably something we'll discuss in later podcasts when we move closer towards the next Fed meetings. But what we're going to focus on now, Alan, is a number of UK corporate updates. We've had a raft of FTSE 100 companies reporting this morning. We're not going to be able to go through all of them due to time constraints, but we're going to pick out a couple of the most important ones. First of all, Alan, Lloyds. Looking at Lloyds, a slight dip in earnings from the last quarter, but significantly up on the same quarter a year ago. What's been happening there at Lloyds?
Well, Lloyds has had a really good it's had a really good run, and of course it does sort of living in Seaford on the south coast, the Lloyds Bank that's been here for years, and I mean I've had a long association with Seaford, and I can remember Lloyds Bank many years ago. Of course, the bank, the branch has closed down here, and it's just the process of centralization where the branches are retained in, of course, the larger towns and cities. The Lloyds is still very much, you know, and along with Halifax, which of course it owns, still very much front and center in the high street, very familiar in the high street, and a very good set of results this morning. Customers are taking out more loans. Group net income rose 12% to just over 4 billion. And over the period, the company also grew its mortgage book up 1.7 billion to 295 billion, which is a huge vote of confidence, I think, for the UK property market. And of course, the fact that as an island, we're a finite landmass, and we have a huge population, and there is a struggle always for properties. So the mortgage market is very much very buoyant. Of course, in the background there, we've got the spectre of rising interest rates. But of course, most mortgage products nowadays will have some insurance against that, or it'll be a fixed rate. I very much doubt we'll ever go back to the boom and bust scenario that we saw in the late 80s when interest rates rocketed, I think, from 2 or 3% up to 16% at one point. So of course that still plays well into the hands of the banks and building societies. But Lloyd's, I think, with its spread, it's still the most connected bank on the high street in the UK, across the UK, of course, with the Lloyd's branches and of course Halifax branches. So I think more of the same going forward. Very, very strong set of results. And of course the markets do seem to like it today. Shares are up 2.2%. Worth holding, of course, even at these levels, given the 4.2% dividend yield as well.
So, and looking at the Lloyd's share price, currently trading around that 47 pence. But if we look back to just before the pandemic, we were trading a whisker beneath 70p. I mean, during this period, we've seen, you know, the expansion and recovery in the UK economy, and we've also seen an increase in interest rates, which is supposed to help the net interest margin of banks, a key measure of their profitability. Yeah. But still, we're stuck beneath 50p on Lloyd's. I mean, what do you feel it's going to take for Lloyd's to break up and revisit those pre-pandemic highs?
Well, of course, the other challenge the banks are facing are the challenger banks, the challenge from the challenger banks. but of course that's something that will never go away. It's the same in other markets too. Of course, in this, you know, the grocery market, you've got Sainsbury's and Sainsbury's and Tesco's facing the likes of Aldi and Lidl. The banks just have to evolve and change. And of course, they're evolving and changing by cutting down their high street presence, offloading the properties and the running costs associated with that, and centralizing everything. So will it return? I think the opportunity to earn more income from cash on deposit, that will of course increase, and of course it will in turn attract more savers that will put more cash on deposit, because savers will realize that perhaps the areas they were getting money from traditionally isn't paying out as effectively. So actually going back and sticking your money in a bank or building society and getting possibly a couple of percent interest every year is attractive. And of course, you're not beating inflation that way, but at least you're getting some gains on the cash on deposit. So all of those factors are going to play into this. Yes, there is uncertainty going forward, but I'm sure at some point, I think the shares where they are now, given their, I think the year lows, of course, versus year highs, we're looking at a year high of 56p. We're not far off that. But I think anything around these levels now, certainly given the strong set of results this morning and a pretty buoyant outlook as well from the bank, I think offers good value. And, of course, that dividend yield of 4.2%.
Yes, I think you allude to it there, Alan, that the dividend yield there of 4%, I think, is more than respectable as compensation for waiting for the share price to get back above 50p and towards those 70p levels. But it will be interesting to see in their next update what they're able to carve out in terms of profit growth, given a slight dip in the last quarter. So staying on the subjects of dividends, it's particularly pertinent for the next company that we're going to discuss in GSK, which has actually cut its total year dividend by 35% due to a disposal of a particular business unit, one of their healthcare units. I mean, what's been happening there in their earnings, Alan? I can see there's a boost in their sales, but I mean, how much do you think that this cutting the dividend is going to impact investor confidence around GSK?
Well, I think the cut in the dividend might be offset by the decent capital gains. I mean, I held GSK shares years ago, but had you picked up the shares at the beginning of March at 14, well, £14.80 per share, you'd have seen a decent gain. Shares are now trading at £17.78, just off the year high of £18. So there's, I think, that disposal and the dividend cut is offset by the capital gain. And this has always been the challenge with Glaxo. I mean, the shares have really, they've done very little over the past few years. But certainly we've seen that strong gain since March this year. So any investors looking to Glaxo and buying at that point will have done well. And of course, they'll continue to get that yield. And the first quarter sales certainly were very impressive indeed, beating expectations, up 32% to just under 10 billion. Commercial operations grew very strongly. Consumer healthcare sales rose 14%, giving the group an underlying profit increase of 39% at 2.6 billion. And that beat analyst expectations across the board. So that's why we've seen the share price pop higher today. The dividend will be 14p. That's encouraging. And the group continues, the outlook's very strong, full year revenue growth between 5 and 7% on the year. Profit growth of between 12 and 14%, but certainly, you know, GSK seems to be fitter, slimmer, and stronger as a result of the disposal. Whether it can push above the year high of £18 per share remains to be seen. So, some investors may want to wait until the euphoria over the numbers today dies down a bit and pick up the share, perhaps. Perhaps a little closer to £17. It may well retrace, but looking at the chart, certainly since March, there have been a series of higher lows propelling the shares higher. So I'd say probably if it comes back to 17 or maybe just under, dips just under to £16, then that would be a good opportunity to pick the shares up for ongoing growth later in the year.
Yes, I mean, look, just looking through this report here, and it's very difficult. I mean, if you were to crudely put GSK in a basket of a growth stock, a value stock, or an income stock, you know, looking at what they're doing today, it'd be very difficult because, you said, the shares haven't done a great deal for years. You know, they've been trading in a relatively tight range.
Yeah.
Haven't had much divergence from that, but we're seeing, you know, quite promising sales figures there, which suggest growth. Whilst they're looking at trimming the income element of holding the stock. So that's another one to I think keep an eye on, just to see how they perform going forward and whether indeed the next quarter does produce such strong growth figures, because that'd be really encouraging for BSK.
Interesting to see too that if you look at the 5-year chart, the 5-year high is £18.46. So we're not far off that at the moment, but the 5-year low was the low at the end of February, last year. So very strong recovery since then. I think we're seeing the stock approach year highs now, with having offloaded the asset. We may well see the shares push higher and maybe test those 5-year highs again. As I say, investors may want to wait for the euphoria to die down after the figures, and of course the opportunity to pick the stock up before it goes ex-dividend.
Yes, I think probably one to have a look at any weakness in that particular stock, Alan. So we're going to touch very quickly now on Twitter, because it was one that we discussed on the podcast a few weeks ago, Alan, when Musk took his 9% stake. Just confirmed in the last few days that he's now going to be taking over Twitter. I mean, this is something that we use quite widely. You use it quite widely as well, Alan. I mean, what's your views as a user of Twitter for Musk taking over the social media platform?
Well, I think there are issues on usability, and one could just put it down to quirkiness. Maybe a lot of, you know, when you're dealing with technology companies like Twitter, of course, the engineers and the techs that design the platform have their own view on how it should work, and often that view makes it a bit quirky. Leaves out something that's obvious, like an edit button. And I think Elon Musk, he's a practical, pragmatic investor, and I think if he sees he can improve something, he'll go in there and do it, because he's got limitless amounts of money to enable him to do that. But of course, you know, people are now saying that Tesla shares are tanking, and perhaps Musk should reconsider. But I don't think that'll dissuade him in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I do think the takeover would be a very good idea. And with Musk at the helm, I think Twitter will become more user friendly, and it's huge. I mean, it's certainly for people in business, and certainly in the financial markets, John, you know, Twitter's a key part of what we do, and I know it's a key part of what you do, because of course when you're looking at price sensitive information stocks, share prices that are moving all the time, Twitter is an instant way to express an opinion or get a view out there. So actually improving the user experience, I think, is very important. It's pretty good, and of course it's quirky. You get used to using it that way. So I'm sure if Musk comes in and makes some changes, then we'll all moan about having to adopt the changes. But actually, I think any changes he makes will improve the user experience and make it easier for everyone to use. So, and I do believe it will go through. I think once he sets his mind on something, he'll get it done.
Yes, I think the deal will get done. It'll just be interesting to see how things develop going forward. I mean, me personally, I don't really have any problems with how it is at the moment. But I think one of the big things that he wants to do is, be an advocate for free speech. So it'll be interesting to see how the topics change around that. And one of the key things is he's looking at removing the bots on there, which will improve everybody's experience on Twitter. So that will be certainly something that's interesting to see how that pans out going forward for the rest of the year. So, Alan, now we have, to finish things off, we've got two IPOs set to list here in London. So we're going to start off with the first one, Lyft Global Ventures. It's going to be going on to the Aquis. And if I'm correct, Alan, it looks as though the first day of trading is going to be this Friday.
It is indeed, John. Yes, indeed. So Lyft Global Ventures, headed up by Zach Mier. Of course, everyone knows Zach. I've worked with Zach for many years, and we're sort of we have a long association. And Zach, I think, has spotted the gap in the market, and rightly so. And he's seen an opportunity to put together a consolidation vehicle for some of the operators and companies offering technology and communication solutions within the sector. So Zach, of course, has been sort of front and center of the sector for many years, but with developing technology, with new technologies coming into the communication process, new platforms, we're all evolving all the time, and he's seen opportunity to fuse some of these platforms together. And of course, you know, they set a very good precedent earlier in the year. Aberdeen Asset Management acquired III Interactive Investor for $1.5 billion. And I'm going all the way back now. When I started Share Crazy, of course, we sold that to a fund management group in 2007. Share Crazy was a series of bulletin boards that we developed with a share trading platform, and we sold it on. Interactive Investor have gone through a number of iterations, but it then became a destination portal where you could go and obviously chat to other investors, trade shares, trade Forex, lodge your pension, and basically do everything financial with them. So it became a go-to platform. And of course, Aberdeen Asset Management saw how they could utilize that and develop it further. So this is an opportunity for Lyft to do the same in a slightly different way. And I think the company is floating at 3p, and I believe there were some late investment opportunities for pre-IPO investors to participate. Investors would get a third warrant, so a warrant for one for every three shares at 6p. So the company floats at 3p, and obviously there's further opportunity for pre-IPO investors who participated at 6p. And of course, the company can't say what it's going to buy, what it's going to do, but it's set its stall out. There's a very good website, liftgv.com, that you can go and look at and understand what the group are trying to do. Just a bit more about the board. Zach, I've already spoken about, of course. Paul Gazzard is the chairman. He's been with Panmure Gordon Asset Management for 8 years previously, and he's involved with a number of AIM-listed companies at senior executive level, and he's well known around the city. And then Tim Daniel, of course, is the FD. I met both Tim and Paul at a launch do before Christmas last year. Tim has been involved with a number of hedge funds across the years, and he was chief financial officer at AIM-listed Equatorial Palm Oil a few years back. And he's been working in the city for many years. So the three of them together, very good team to get the company off the ground, start making those acquisitions and consolidating in the sector. So, yeah, an exciting IPO.
Yes, and quite fittingly, actually, I'm going to be speaking to CEO of the Aquis Exchange later on today. So that interview will be out on the UK Investor Magazine website in the coming week. For anyone that's not familiar with the Aquis Exchange, there should be some deep insights into them, what they're trying to do for small companies and growth companies such as Lyft Global Ventures. Do check that out when that's on the website. So the second IPO, Alan, is Spectrum X. Can you tell us a little bit about them, please?
Yeah, certainly. Spectrum X are coming to market. I believe the IPO valuation is around 50 million when it comes to market in a few months. You'll have heard, or most people will have heard by now of hypochlorous acid, which is it's something developed from basically from white blood cells, and it's completely it doesn't smell, it has no taste, it's basically like water, but hypochlorous acid kills 99.9% of all known pathogens. Bacterial, fungal, and it's all part of our natural defense system. And Spectrum Antimicrobials in California have been working on developing a solution or developing hypochlorous acid into a solution. And of course, they have developed a range of products now, which I've seen, and they're extremely effective. Part of the issue, of course, with hand sanitizers that we've been using across the past few years with COVID is that they're all alcohol based, and of course, particularly in the NHS where you're using hand sanitizers all the time, alcohol can chap your hands and it can make your hands sore and you know creates a number of problems like that. That there's no such issue with the Spectrum X offering, and Spectrum X have a number of solutions in this area. You've got the Spectraceptor hand sanitizer, which the NHS have now adopted. It's being used at major hospitals up and down the country, including the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital and West Middlesex Hospital. And in fact, Dr. Gary Davis at Chelsea at Westminster said the feedback from staff on using Spectraceptor has been overwhelmingly positive. It's all halal certified in line with Islamic law too, which is also very important, certainly for the Middle East and Asian markets. The company from this has also developed a range of cosmetic products, Spectra Skin, and also, of course, many premises now use fogging as a means of killing bacteria and killing any COVID particles or other disease particles, such as in hospitals, MRSA and others, in the air using Spectra Mist. And all of these products have been featured regularly in the national press. There was something in the Evening Standard a few weeks back, which looked at the opportunity. So that's the Spectrum X Direct covered. On the medical side, they've developed a groundbreaking treatment for respiratory diseases and other applications. It's called SPC-069, and it treats and kills all major diseases. It's undergone medical trials at the University of Innsbruck. But it also compares very favorably. Of course, the AIM company Synergen has been developing a similar product using an interferon beta process. And this has proven it basically failed in its final tests. It proved to be very expensive. The Synergen product cost roughly £2,000 per patient, whereas the Spectrum X SPC069 costs a fraction of that, if anything at all, to treat patients, and is 100% effective. It's already undergone in vitro testing, and it's passed all of the tests. So all of the boxes are ticked in that regard. The company's coming to market. In the run-up to the IPO, the company's appointed Barry Saint as the chief financial officer, and Barry is formerly chief financial officer in Indivior, the FTSE 250 company, and also worked with a number of early-stage biotechs. And also Deborah Reeves has been appointed as a non-exec director, and Deborah is non-exec at Cambridge Cognition, Atelerix, and she's also been on the boards of Pfizer, GSK, GE Healthcare, and has a very impressive track record in this area. So, again, coming to market very shortly. There is, again, an opportunity for investors to participate in this. If you go to the SpectrumX website, that's spectrumx.com. There is a button on the toolbar, Investor Relations, where high net worths and sophisticated investors can participate in the pre-IPO investment opportunity. You need to complete the request for information form, and then somebody will contact you in regard to your interest. So, yeah, coming to market very shortly, SpectrumX.
Is there any indication, Alan, on when it will come to market? I mean, is it a matter of weeks or months?
I think we're looking at by the end of the first half of the year. That's my understanding. It could be sooner than that.
Okay, perfect. So as Alan detailed there, something to check out if you're interested in pre-IPO opportunity. So just a recap of the equities that we've discussed today. First of all, was Lloyd's, with, of course, a ticker of LLOY. It was then a GlaxoSmithKline with a ticker of GSK, and it then was Lyft Global Ventures with a ticker of LFT, and to finish off with Spectrum X, which is yet to have a stock exchange ticker, but I'm sure we'll have one in the very near future. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
Just as a note to listeners, we have the next installment of our virtual conferences coming up next week on Tuesday. It's going to be an investment trust conferences, and there's going to be fund managers presenting from M&G Investments, Premier Miton, and Aberdeen. So if you're interested in investment trust, definitely something that is worth checking out, and you can register in the events tab on the UK Investor Magazine website. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.